You're listening to the Functional Nerds Podcast with your hosts, Patrick Hester and Tracy Townsend. Tracy, this is, This is the all-new uncanny episode of the Functional Nerds Podcast.
It is the all-new uncanny episode of Nerds.
As I'm blurring the lines between some of our favorite comic books and some of our favorite magazines.
Why not? Let's blur it all. Yeah. I mean, we're at this point of recording, in any case. We're in the middle of July, which is generally a blurry time in any case. We're just kind of mid heat wave, post nationalism, all that kind of stuff. It's a lot.
Ridiculously drugging my dog every single day for a week.
Oh, so that he Ronan,
not tremble and piss himself.
Are we good now, Ronan? Is he cool?
A little bit, but this is Aurora, Colorado, and in Aurora, Colorado, the fireworks don't end just because July 4th has ended. Mm, so every night around 11 o'clock, some asshole is shooting off fireworks.
There's a schmancy golf course about a mile and a half from my house. And one of the things you can do at the schmancy golf course is get married. And one of the things you do if you get married at the schmancy golf course is pay extra for a fireworks package. And so in addition to the fact that that's where all of the municipal firework events for the city happen, it is also pretty much guaranteed that like 3 or 4 nights out of every month year round, we're going to have some kind of firework spectacular mm-hmm. thing, which is where I get kind of happy that the dog's going deaf. So it's made chillaxing incredibly easier.
Yeah. See, in my house, when the fireworks go off, my 55-pound dog becomes a lap dog.
Oh.
And that's not as much fun as you might think it is.
Mm. Yeah. Yeah, no, I can imagine that.
But you know, it is fun.
Mm, yeah.
Segways.
You ditched me right there. You're such a jerk. How are things in the middle of Illinois? Michael Damian Thomas, who is joining us from Uncanny Magazine.
Well, hello, Patrick and Tracy. It's corn sweat season.
So, oh God, yeah.
So it is, as always, hot and humid in central Illinois, here down in Champaign-Urbana. But it is, otherwise, it is still, it's fine.
Fine-ish.
Yeah. Well, students are gone, which means, mm-hmm. you know, the city is ours, you know, pretty much.
Yeah. Wahaha.
Wahaha.
So. My son did his first year of college just this like spring that has finished up. And and he's down at Illinois College, which is in Jacksonville, which for those of you who don't know your Illinois geography is on the west side of the state. If you throw a rock kind of hard, you might hit Missouri from there. But in any case, it's very much corn sweat zone there. And I had never spent very much time in central Illinois, nor he. But when we moved him in August of last year and coming up in about a month from now, plus a bit, it's a whole climate disaster.
It is, Ed, with basically because of climate change, you know, because I lived here in the 90s, it's much hotter and more humid, but also Tornado Alley is now here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So we have now set the record already. You know, it hits you too, Tracy, because Illinois now is way ahead of every other state with tornadoes. So I've spent also a lot of the last couple of months running into shelters.
I've heard a lot of things about Tornado Alley, but the worst one is that it blows.
Oh, bro. Talk about the need for segues. We need to talk about anything but that joke, which means that it's a very good thing. you're so pleased with yourself. I'm humiliated.
Yes, whenever I make a really bad pun, I'm always.
Oh, yeah. Well done, Patrick Louise. Well done. All right. So, Michael, fill us in on what we have to look forward to with the freshly launched, as of the day before this episode is coming out, the freshly launched Uncanny Year 13 Kickstarter.
Yes, as of recording, it is not launched. So hopefully nothing has gone awry and everything did launch on July 13th. But this is, which is appropriate because this is the Uncanny Magazine Year 13, the Space Unicorn Believes in You Kickstarter. So nice. It is, yes, we've made it through 12 years already. Yeah. I'm working on the last issue, as we speak, I'm also working on the last issue for year 12. So, but this is another opportunity for the Space Unicorn Ranger Corps to get together and help Uncanny Magazine exist for yet another year. As always, this is a major source of our income. It has become more so over time, especially as the big online retailer, which all of us know oh so well, we had to pull ourselves from their streaming service because the terms changed yet again. So now at this point, Uncanny makes $0 from subscription money from the large online retailer that we all know and love so well. It's maybe named after a large river. But it is more important than ever that people come together and help Uncanny exist. And this year, as a kind of a special, fun thing, it is going to be our milestone issue 75 year. So the third issue will be issue 75. And we got a fun thing, because for that issue, all the fiction writers who are solicited and two of the essayists who are solicited have formally won an award for something they wrote that was in Uncanny.
Nice.
That is truly a star-studded issue then.
It is awesome. A star-studded issue. So that issue, once again, assuming we fund, which hopefully we will. I mean, we funded the other time, so hopefully this is not some tragic podcast I listen to back and cry about what could have been and remembering what Uncanny was. And yeah, but no, so for the authors for this issue will be Elliot de Bodar, John Chu, RSA Garcia, Naomi Kritzer, Samantha Mills, Sarah Pinsker, and Emma Torsch.
Very cool.
That is a super, super cool table of contents.
Yes, I'll have won Hugo's, Ignite's, Nebula's, and World Fantasy Awards, and Locust Awards for their Sturgeon Awards for their Uncanny Magazine stories.
Many shiny and frequently heavy objects.
Yes. Which has been worked into one of our Uncanny Sarah Pinsker stories.
It's kind of funny, or maybe ironic, that a week ago-ish, one of our patrons, Robert, messaged me and he's like, "Hey, isn't it about time for Uncanny's Kickstarter?"
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, "Yeah."
He sensed the vibration in the
force. Yeah, he knew it was coming. So
yeah, this is one of those where sometimes we run a little bit earlier, but a lot of it's dependent on, because Uncanny drops on the first Tuesday of the month.
Mm-hmm.
Uncanny can drop anywhere from the first to the seventh or whatever it was. So like this was a late drop. And I don't want to start a Kickstarter before or right on top of that week of
right.
issue dropping. So it ended up being slightly. So this is the rotation where we're just slight bit later in the month cycle.
Yeah, but that's fine. Is that he's already looking for it. He's already aware that it's coming. He's waiting for it. So
good. That is good, because we need everybody back. All hands on deck. Gone. And the essayists who have won awards previously in the issue 75 will be Tanana Reeve Du and Tansy Rayner Roberts. So, nice.
So that's fantastic.
And that's just issue 75.
So much more.
There's so much more, because I've also solicited some authors for the rest of the year. So for fiction, we will also have Sena Ahmed, Maurice Broaddus, J.R. Dawson, Fonda Lee, and Arkady Martin throughout the year. They've all been solicited for fiction.
Mm-hmm.
Our brand new nonfiction editor, Monty Lin, who is also our managing editor,
mm-hmm.
has also solicited some other essays from Banana Chan, Carlos Cisco, Lynn Codega, Yunha Lee, and Aaron Roberts. And finally, our poetry editor, Betsy Aoki, has solicited poetry from Lisa M. Bradley, Marie Brennan, Pedro Iniguez, Angela Liu, Marines, and Brandon O'Brien.
I love all of that. That is going to be
that's
really
all the
fun.
Solicits. And of course, as always with Uncanny, there will be plenty of slots for unsolicited. And once assuming that we fund, the moment we have funded for the year, then we will set up the process and we will open up to the submissions for poetry and fiction. So that yearly scrum of people submitting will happen.
One of the things that I think is kind of, I was actually reading your blog post recently on Uncanny's website, talking about the imminence of the of the Kickstarter and everything, you referred to it as like a yearly referendum on whether or not your business should exist. And which, you know, is a very pointed, but I think still accurate way of describing the experience of running the Kickstarter. But I think what I'm interested in, and I want to kind of like extrapolate out of that observation, is in a referendum exists so that people have a chance to say what they want from something, in essence, and to kind of vote for that thing that they want. And so if we choose to view the Kickstarter as a referendum on Uncanny, what are people voting for?
Well, I think they are voting for a continuation of the ethos of Uncanny Magazine, which is, you know, bringing gorgeous stories, essays, poetry, interviews, podcast, art, you know, that evokes things that make you really feel, you know, that challenge, you know, that kind of make you think, make you feel, just many different things, you know, good, bad, but definitely things that are very evocative and come from authors who are all over the world from different and have many different backgrounds, and, you know, stories that a lot of people go to year in, year out and say, hey, I finally found a story that I can see myself in. And that to me is all very important. And it seems that it remains important to a lot of people. And, you know, Uncanny still seems to be resonating. There are quite a few, you know, once again, you know, many of our pieces recently have been nominated for awards or won awards. And that seems to keep rolling. And that says to me that in most respects, people still want and need this magazine. But, you know, the thing with the Kickstarter is this is the put your money where your mouth is moment. You know, mm-hmm. people, you know, and I hope that, because one of the things about it is that, you know, these are stories that are going to be online that'll be read by, you know, tens of thousands, sometimes hundreds of thousands of people around the world. And many of them reading these things in places where perhaps stories like this are getting harder to find because there are things going on with their governments making it difficult to get these kinds of stories. But when you support the Kickstarter or patron on Patreon or get a subscription via waitlist, this is not just you saying, I want to see Uncanny continue because of myself. What you are doing is you are making sure Uncanny continues for everybody, whether they have the means or not to support, or they've been safe for them to support Uncanny where they live. You know, it is an important thing, you know, to keep, I feel, Uncanny and many of the other markets, you know, going and getting, you know, keeping it so that we can be reached around. And when you put even a couple bucks towards it, you make it so that we can pay the creators and I can pay the staff. Cause to me, it's very important that the staff gets some money. And also with me at this stage in my life, Uncanny is part of my income. It's not a large part of my income, but I need this income. So it's important that hopefully we make enough money that Uncanny can continue and everyone can get paid and hopefully continue to increase the amount of income coming in. So hopefully one day this may be my only job, which would be a wonderful thing for me.
I think for me, one of the most interesting things about the observing, reading, you know, to the extent that I've been able to talk with you and other people who have been part of the creation of Uncanny, being part of the Uncanny journey, is the kind of movement from in 2014 being the kind of upstart newbie to being, dare I say, a kind of piece of the established voice of SFF right now, right? Which I imagine you might feel a certain kind of way about me saying that.
No.
Like
for me, a lot of the last 14 years have been intense and a blur, you know, and you know, because of going through, especially everything with my daughter, Caitlin's health and hospitalization stuff. So like it's one of those things where I don't necessarily remember a time before Uncanny, but simultaneously, like everything has been happening on top, you know, it does seem like it goes fast. And then you realize one day you're talking to a writer and they're like, oh yeah. And the thing is like, you know, so many of them are like, yeah, I read Uncanny in high school when I was a teenager. And I'm so amazed that I'm now here I am in my 30s getting in. And I'm like, ah, yeah, you know, that's not possible. No. You know, but there it is. It's right there. You know, we have been around for a while and there are stories which you know, have been passed around for a long time. And, you know, it's and writers, you know, I'm working with now, yeah, who are definitely, yeah, that's how young they are. And that's how mm-hmm. young some of the readers are, you know. So it's, and yeah, we have, you can't really call yourself the young upstart anymore when you've won 8 Hugo Awards.
Yeah.
You know, for the magazine, you know, it's just at that point and all these things, as you know, I was talking about issue 75, like, you know, that was just a selection of the authors who have won awards with Uncanny Works. Issue 75 could have had a tremendous number of stories in it. Mm-hmm. You know, mm-hmm. if everyone who'd ever won an award had agreed, you know, it was just, trying to keep it down to our more or less normal size this time. Because issue 50 being double sized, was a lot. That was a lot to do.
Wait, you might have learned things from that. about the limit of human endeavor.
Well, I did it in Caitlin's hospital room, so I'm not quite sure how I did a double issue that year, but you know, and how everything basically happened on time, and it was pretty much what we say. So yeah, everything has always happened on Uncanny on time. So, but yeah, we are now part of the establishment, which is interesting. But mm-hmm. at the same time, like, the nature of magazine publishing right now means everybody's an underdog. Like, yeah. It's not like I feel like, oh yeah, we're Uncanny and I'm swimming in it and money and
no one's exactly throwing their weight around here.
No. Everything is, you know, as I said more than once here, which gets back to the referendum, this is precarious. If this Kickstarter fails, we're done. That's it. I send out a nice note. I publish whatever my small bit of inventory left and go good, you know, so long and thanks for the space unicorn. You know, but I hope that doesn't happen, but that's where it is every year. You know, mm-hmm. there's not been a time where it's like, oh yeah, we don't need to run Kickstarters anymore. Or, oh yeah. Like we're, you know, it's going to, and it's not just us, you know, you can read behind every magazine has pretty much the same messaging right now.
Yeah. So with respect to that precariousness that you experience, and let's face it, the vast majority of semi-pro zines experience.
Well, I would say even the professional magazines at this
point. Oh, yeah. Yeah. That kind of push and pull of market and the question of readership and the question of exposure and, you know, social media has sort of exploded into tons of different diaspora spaces and so on. What special role do you think that magazines like yours have the opportunity to play despite all of that precariousness?
Well, I still feel that there is a beauty to the art. Well, you know, and I'll talk first about the fiction, but you know, but the same goes with the essays and the interviews and the poetry. I mean, all the content in there, but it is a short bite-sized piece of beauty that can resonate and be consumed in a fairly short amount of time in your life, where you can experience see a character go through a small journey. You could see cool ideas, can read gorgeous sentences. I think that arts and beauty still have a meaning in our existence that as we doom scroll and flip through things that have less and less meaning, to sit down with a beautiful well-crafted, gorgeous story and to experience everything that is in a story or a poem and how it can affect you emotionally, intellectually, you know, how it can help you see the world in a different way, can help you increase your empathy, can help you get through a hard time, whether it's through escapism or just seeing, once again, a story that resonates with your own story. Like, all of this still has a great meaning to me. And I think it's still vastly important that these things come out there and that the magazines are a home for all the people creating these things. And we need multiple magazines with slightly different points of view because there are many different kinds of stories to be told and are being told. So it's important for us to have this community of magazines and other things. You know, one of my other jobs right now is I am the content editor for the It's Storytime with Will Wheaton podcast. So one of the things that's going on is, you know, I'm delving not just into Uncanny, but many, many other magazines looking for stories that Will can read, and so that his readers can have it, you know, much like on our the Uncanny podcast, the oral experience of having, you know, these stories, you know, come to them. Because I still think, yeah, this is still an important art form. I don't feel that it's time for us to drop all of this and just be all novels all the time. Right. As great as novels are, I love novels. I read a lot of novels, but I still think this is very important, and it's can be frustrating for me and upsetting just how precarious it is, because I feel the numbers show, like, we have readership that is the same or more than the readership of paper magazines of the 1980s. Mm-hmm. It's just people don't pay anymore because the way the internet is, mm-hmm. which is, you know, great for some people because there are people who have access to these stories who wouldn't have back then. Mm-hmm. And whether it be also it's easier for them to submit. So it's a whole new, it's wonderful how it works, but the money's not coming in the way it needs to make this a sustainable business, because even though this art is important, at the end of the day, we're also still businesses and we can't be in massive debt. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You know, look, Uncanny's not in debt. You know, we still always stay above board thanks to the Kickstarter and Patreon and all the other stuff. But we're still, it's very difficult when it takes that many, you know, basically is a full-time job for me to run Uncanny, but I'm getting paid much, much less than a full-time job.
Right. So I have a bit of a swerve here, but I think it fits in with what we're talking about, because you talked about the readership, the engagement with this empathy engine that is fiction, looks the same numbers wise as it did decades ago, but we're in an environment now where people don't pay to access a lot of that fiction, and they don't expect to pay for it. And you know, it's not an exact equivalency here, but there are so many different sort of spheres in which people have become accustomed to not paying, or not paying in a sort of individuated, I'm paying for this specific mm-hmm. book, this specific album, this specific movie, this whatever. Mm-hmm. People are just sort of used to being given access to a multiplicity of entertainments. And I know that you and Michael, and also you, Patrick, are very committed to collecting art that you care about in physical form. And I would love to hear you both talk about that for a little bit, because I think it's kind of connected to this idea of like what keeps the wheels turning.
Well, for me, I mean, I don't even, but it's just, I've been collecting since I was a kid, but also, all right. So I had, this is a very nerdy like thing to have had.
Oh no, don't nerd. Upsetting.
So I'm not sure if anyone has heard about this, but there's this TV show from the United Kingdom that's science fiction that I've watched a few times called Doctor Who, and have a bit of a fondness for.
Would you care for the jelly, baby?
Yes, maybe a little. So yeah, maybe some people know that I'm a bit into Doctor Who. So when I was young, I got used to watching Doctor Who play on my local PBS station, Chicago WTTW, which was actually one of the main big PBS stations showing Doctor Who for a long time.
I also watched Doctor Who on PBS, but in Fresno, California. Woo. Continue.
But so I was very used to like, oh, it's always going to be on. It's on Sunday nights, or I think they moved around a little bit, but mostly it was like Sunday nights at 11 p.m. and I'll just stay up late and watch a Doctor Who story, and they would run through them again and again and again. And it got close to, so season 26 had come out in the UK, and like I was excited to watch because I was really into the Seventh Doctor. And you know, then we got the news that was put on hiatus and that we didn't know if there'd be any Doctor Who left. But then all of a sudden, like, you know, one night I'm watching PBS and they announce, well, we're not showing Doctor Who anymore, we're gonna start with The Prisoner next week. And suddenly, like, I didn't get to see the final season of Doctor Who. And I was upset. I was very, very upset.
Of course.
And then, like, I kind of wandered away from Doctor Who, but around 96, after the Paul McGann movie was on Fox, I got back in. And at that point, I had, and this is like a ridiculous part of the story, but for a small amount of time, I'd been a smoker. And then basically an agreement was reached with with my fiance at the time that I would stop smoking and use that money to buy these VHS videos coming out about Doctor Who. Suddenly I was excited about Doctor Who again. And once I started doing that, I was like, yes, I now own this story and no one can take it away from me ever again. And like that became my thing instead of like using, you know, so that was my kind of my funsies money was like collecting these things and mm-hmm. buying the physical media of stuff I loved. And eventually I got caught up and now I will buy the DVD and now I will buy the Blu-ray. But one of the things I've watched is that suddenly in it, like another generation of people experienced what I went through, but in vaster thing, you know, who were like, I don't need this physical media. It'll be on streaming forever. Mm-hmm. Wait a minute. I can't find this on streaming anymore. Mm-hmm. Or it's now on the service that I don't want to pay that much for. And like the knowledge that at any moment that the streaming paradise can do whatever, they can cut what scenes out of what you like, they can redo dialogue, they can just make it disappear forever, whatever. It's like, okay, yeah, I just want to have that thing. So, mm-hmm. so yes, I have every possible Doctor Who permutation on physical media and still do, even though right now everything in my life is in a storage facility. But it's, yeah. And then, you know, through the years, you know, I've collected a lot of other things because I also love music. I have a lot of CDs and I love, mm-hmm. you know, and, you know, I have a lot of my late daughter Caitlin's physical media because she also loved it, you know, and it was, and, you know, over a time you start remembering like, yeah, this is also like, cause when, you know, Caitlin was getting very much into her punk rock phase and getting to know some musicians, you know, it's like the reminder of, yeah, this big streaming music service really screws over the creators. They're not getting mm-hmm. paid what they got paid per CD, you know? Mm-hmm. So you do kind of like go, you know what? I'm still going to buy the CD then, mm-hmm. you know, when I can. Yeah. And yeah, very likely my physical media days, though not over, will be slowing down a bit just because my life has changed a lot. But mm-hmm. but yes, I am currently figuring out how to move a gigantic physical media collection from Champaign-Urbana yeah. to someplace to the United
to Kingdom. Elsewhere. Yeah,
yeah, that's always a big
open secret.
Yeah, that's always a problem because I've always loved books and I've always yeah. bought books and I've always kept books with me. When I was a kid, we moved into a house in Fresno and my room had a built-in bookshelf. And I saw that and my goal was to fill that bookshelf with books mm-hmm. that I would own. I was the kid that I hated the library. And the reason I hated the library is because they always wanted the book back.
Right.
And I wanted to keep the book. I wanted to keep the book. It's funny that you mentioned Doctor Who because right now, you know, with everything going on with the quote unquote modern era, mm-hmm. they're now moving to the only place you can stream it, I think, is AMC Plus.
Yes.
But you only get up to Jodie Whittaker. And then now the Shudigatwa yeah. stuff is only going to be on Disney Plus because Disney paid for it.
Yes.
And so what I did not too long ago is I did not have any of the modern era stuff physically. I did buy it on that website that you were talking about earlier as a digital product, but the licensing can go away at any point on yeah. there and I could lose it. So I did end up buying Eccleston, Tennant, Smith, what's his face? Capaldi. And Jodie Whittaker's all on physical media. And so yep. I have those. Now I have a bunch of classic Who because Tom Baker was my favorite. I've got, I've got the older DVD versions and now I've got some Blu-ray versions. Yep. And so I did start buying the physical media on that because I wanted to have it. And it's funny because I was telling Robert, a while ago, I'm like, man, I feel like I want to watch Battlestar Galactica, but it wasn't streaming anywhere at the time. And I'm like, well, I've got it in a box downstairs. I just need to go dig it out of the damn box and watch it, mm-hmm. you know? And it's funny because I've got some DVDs sitting here on my desk because I ended up for this computer, I bought an external drive that could play them because now computers don't come with them anymore.
Yep.
Yeah. And then I experienced the thing where I bought the external drive and I install it and there's no software to run it. There's nothing to play a DVD or a Blu-ray. you have to go and get that software for it because they just don't give it to you anymore. It's like they are doing everything that they possibly can to keep you from having physical media anymore.
Well, the thing is, though, the wins, you know, and I also have a large number of books, though, not as much as I used to, but
I have enough books that people won't help me move anymore.
Luckily, I did carry a lot of those into a storage unit. The Doctor Who magazine boxes were the ones that almost killed me. I read up a lot about this. And the thing is, what I am seeing, though, is like, there's a lot of news about Sony, two things happened almost in like a week. One, they, a whole bunch of digital movies that they had, people had bought got just taken away from them, shows you how great that is. But then they simultaneously announced, now all games for PlayStation are going to be digital only, and you're going to walk in and buy a box that has a code in the game store.
And did you see the response from Domino's?
Yes.
About that?
Yeah, I saw that.
So Domino's is now going to only exclusively do digital pizzas?
Yeah, I believe it was UK Domino's that did that too. But the thing is, this is happening at the same time where I'm watching as CD sales and physical media sales are going up.
Yeah, I'm buying vinyl again.
Yeah, though vinyl now seems to be switching back to the vinyl is starting to plateau, and now people are going especially Gen Z. Mm-hmm. Gen Z loves CDs. It was actually really cool recently, going into UCD store that I've been going to since I was 17, here in Champaign-Urbana, and for a while there, they were barely buying CDs, and I was the only one buying them. And now, all the youngs from the university, they're all going in and going, "Oh wow, we can get these things for only $10." And then, the CDs are made, and the sales numbers are starting to go up again on CD, and not to where they were, but they steadied off and they're starting to increase again. And I feel like this is the experience everyone, because there's just a lot of these streaming services are getting more expensive. They are getting more headachey at any moment. You're like, but I bought this for these shows and now, and these movies, and now it's gone. And I can't have 70 services trying to track where my things go.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And it's like, and for Hollywood, it's also like eventually they will come back to the realization of, oh yeah, we made more money that way.
Whoopsie poopsie.
I mean, the downside, which to get back to the movers, your space, there is a downside with physical media, but barring even the cost, is just there comes points with collections, they are just huge. It is
and it doesn't help when you grew up on Tetris.
Yes.
Because what I absolutely adore and love is when I can fill up a box perfectly with books or CDs or something, and it fills up perfectly. And I'm like, yes. And then I tape it off and I try to pick it up and it's impossible to pick up.
Yes.
I'm like, oh shit. And it's the small box. Damn it.
Yeah, I know. I said I just
outsmarted yourself.
That was my December.
That will be
me in the fall again, so autumn.
Well, so since we just got done talking about things that we love, it seems like a good time to hit Picks of the Week.
We'll get to Picks of the Week. Just hold your horses. We'll get there. Before we do, I wanted to talk to you for just a second about $5. I know. You're shaking your head now. Look. They say that $5 doesn't go as far as it used to, and they're kind of right. Can you get a cup of coffee for $5 these days? Some of you are saying yes, like a black coffee, right? You could get a small black coffee probably for $5 somewhere, but you're not going to be able to get one of the fancy ones with the stuff in it. Shot of this, shot of that. Those are going to cost you a lot more, so that $5 is not going to get you that. But you know what? There's a place where you can get a ton of value for just $5 a month. And that is patreon.com/functionalnerds. Let me break it down for you. $5 a month and you gain access to things like our super secret Facebook group, which has been going on forever. are brand new and popular so far. I'm enjoying it. A lot of other people are enjoying it. But our brand new Discord server, which is also super secret, can't get there from anywhere else. You have to be a patron of the Functional Nerds to get there. You get a monthly video hangout. And those are really cool. That's me and Tracy host. And the patrons like you, if you become one, get to hang out with us. And we all chat and we talk about the things that are going on in the world and have a little bit of a nerdy conversation. We talk about books sometimes and movies and other things. So you get that for $5. And on top of all of that, one of our most popular things that listeners absolutely love, you get the Patreon exclusive episode of the pod that we call Just Us. That is just me and Tracy talking about stuff. And by the way, if you joined today, you would get all the back episodes of that, I believe, which is kind of cool. And that's all for $5 a month. I mean, come on. What are you waiting for? Head over to patreon.com/functionalnerds and help us keep the lights on and keep this thing we call the Functional Nerds Podcast rolling on. While you do that, you don't have to like pull your earbuds out or stop listening. We're just going to jump right into the other thing that listeners really, really love. It's called Picks of the Week.
All right. So, Patrick, what would you pick for this week?
So I'm going to pick the words. I do the audiobooks, but California Patrick in one of our patron hangouts reminded me or informed all of us. I think this was the one that you missed, Tracy.
Yeah.
Due to circumstances, that there was a new Murderbot story out that I did not.
Oh, I did see some stuff about that.
And so it's called Platform Decay from Martha Wells. And it's a new Murderbot story. And I did not know that this existed because I just haven't been paying attention. And so I immediately, like during that hangout, I bought the audiobook. And to the point of our previous conversation, when I buy an audiobook, the first thing that I do is I actually download it to my hard drive on my computer, and then I back it up to my audiobook. I have an audiobook backup drive.
Wow.
Because I have lost audiobooks in the past when suddenly, you know, Audible loses the license for some reason.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, this is like the theme of this episode.
Yeah, it is. I can tell you a really long story about Fred Kish, but I won't. But it's Martha Wells. It's narrated by Kevin R. Free. And I adore it. Like I'm still love Murderbot. So Murderbot's great. Martha's great. I know that she tells everybody to read her fantasy. So please go read her fantasy as well. Mm-hmm. But I do love Murderbot. So Murderbot, Platform Decay. That is my pick.
Nice. Michael, what has been bringing you joy?
Well, I had actually a couple of different ideas, but then you said, because when you said I have a swerve for you, suddenly like, I know what I have to talk about now. So many people probably know that Caitlin was a very big wrestling fan. And
I know where you're going here.
Yes.
Deirdre loves the what you're about to talk about.
Yeah. So like literally you said swerve and I almost yelled out, whose house? Swerve's house. So yes. So I am still... Yeah, and this is kind of one of those ways where, like, Caitlin, you know, right now I'm living in a guest room with Caitlin's cremains, and since many respects, like Caitlin, I feel her still like around me all the time, you know, in my heart and just in general there. And you know, my wife Kirsty spent a lot of time with Caitlin, and via Caitlin got very in love with wrestling, and you know, and stepkids will, you know, have had moments where they love wrestling too very much. And or one of my stepkids. So it's like I still, though at this second, it's not their primary love, but they were really into it for a bit. Hopefully it'll come, you know, we'll see. But I am still watching.
Osprey's going to Wembley. It could be their thing.
Yes, I am still watching AEW, and it's still, so All Elite Wrestling, for those who don't know, is like the very good company versus the other company, the other big, huge company, which is, we don't want to talk about their things, but AEW is just wonderful. It's got fun wrestling, great wrestlers. It is more diverse. It is more open to things. It is just a joy to watch. I love, and you know, went to a lot of shows with Caitlin during her lifetime, and I went recently here, you know, in Peoria, you know, by myself, which is hard, but last year at this time I went to a show with Kirsty, which was wonderful. So yes, there it is going to be something which I highly recommend for people who want to see just amazing action and storytelling and fabulous personalities who all treated Caitlin very well behind the scenes too. She got to meet a few of the wrestlers, and you know, the company was very, very good to her. Mm-hmm. And you know, it's something that connects me to my family in a lot of ways. Though, as the side note, because I'm like, what the hell? I guess I have a few minutes. So AEW is still something I greatly love. The other thing, though, I've been deep diving into is, you know, because my family is in Scotland, I spend a lot of time now watching YouTube videos and reading books about Scottish history and culture and learning all things Scotland. So, you know, two podcasts that I've been watching, the one you can see the pictures. There's two YouTubers that I watch. You know, one is called Scottish History Tour, which is Bruce Fumey, and he takes you to different places in Scotland and gives you kind of fun, quick 15-minute, here's a history that happened here. And the other one, her name is Ruth Ashling, and she has a camper van and she travels around Scotland and goes to kind of especially out of the way places and, you know, different islands and beaches and things, and just kind of shows you things you can see in Scotland. Cause I am getting so deep into Scottish history and culture I love my wife very much. And Scotland is fascinating me for some reason right now. We'll see, you know, stay tuned, everybody. But it's, yeah, that is my kind of my joy is the wrestling. And that in the moments where I'm not working all the jobs and sure, trying to be there for people I love who are far, far away.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, that's a lot.
Sorry.
No, it's good. It's a good lot. It's a good lot. It's both things can be true.
Episode, Michael David Thomas is a lot.
It's a lot. that's truthful branding right there.
Yeah, probably.
So, surprise, Tracy's going to choose a game. We had some folks over on Big Splody Day, also known as the 4th of July. And when we had folks over on Big Splody Day, we did mostly, you know, more party games than sort of bigger chewy stuff. And one of the party games that we played is called The Chameleon. So The Chameleon, it comes from Big Potato Games, and it is a really fantastic game to play with people who are not sure that they want to play games. And it works in about 15 minutes. It's good for a variable size of crowd, about 3 to 8 players. And the idea behind The Chameleon is everybody who plays is dealt at random a card that will tell them whether they have a grid that will allow them to decode what everyone's about to talk about, or if they're the chameleon. If you have the grid, what's going to happen is there's going to be a topic that is available to you, and using the grid card, you're able to look at the information on the card that's laid out at the center of the table and know, we are all going to talk about movies now or something. Or we're all going to talk about, you know, we're all going to talk about food or something. And there'll be a list of different titles of movies or different types of foods or something on said card. If you got the chameleon card, you don't have any idea what specific thing on this card, because it's not just you're going to talk about all the movies on this card. It's that you need to talk about The Godfather. But you're going to talk about The Godfather using just one word clues that are also general enough that it could refer to any of the movies or most of the movies on that card, or the foods or the whatever. And so everyone goes around and gives their one word clue contribution. And you're trying to do two things. If you're the chameleon, you're trying to not get got. And so you're trying to figure out from what other people are giving as clues what a credible-ish sounding clue might be. And if you are one of the people who knows what's up and is giving clues, you're trying to give a clue that's going to tell people, no, no, I'm cool, I know what's up, without giving away what the specific thing is that you're trying to hide from the chameleon. At the end of all those people going around, the group votes on who they think the chameleon is, and then based on whether or not the chameleon smoked y'all or got caught, points are divvied out. To be honest with you, the points part of this feels deeply negligible. We played without even keeping track of points and still had a hell of a good time. We played with a group of people that ranged from like 11 years old up to their mid-50s, and everybody was still able to hang and get the references that they needed to, and we were cool. So if you are looking for a game that hits those kind of buttons, I would check out The Chameleon.
Sounds awesome.
Yeah. All right. So on the subject of awesome, we are now at the time of this releasing, unless, you know, I don't know, flying monkeys and terrible things have happened or something, in the very beginning days of the Uncanny Year 13 Kickstarter. I can tell
that neither one of you are superstitious at all. Jesus Christ.
I mean, I would knock on something, but then you'd have to edit it out.
You both need to knock on wood.
Okay, I'm going to knock on the microphone now. Shoulder. This is your fault, and you're going to have to... Okay, see, now that's in the recording. Yeah,
that's fine.
That's on you, Patrick
Louise.
You're
both freaking me out.
Well, it's not like you need a Friday the 13th launch.
True. A Monday the 13th launch is kind of, it's like a Garfield's idea of a really bad idea.
Yeah. Monday the 13th is like, yeah, it's Garfield with a hockey mask.
Yeah, there you go. It's probably fine.
The knife is to cut the lasagna. Not,
all right, yeah, with the big knife. Teenagers. Yeah,
so
it's fine.
We're good.
Cool. It's whatever. All right, so Michael, where can people go to support the Kickstarter to get themselves some Uncanny and otherwise be involved in what we hope will be a fabulous Year 13?
Well, you can find Uncanny on... all of the different, so, you know, not all of them, but on about, what are we, I believe 7 social media accounts that we have to now do thanks to the schisming of social media. So you can find Uncanny Magazine first on its website, uncannymagazine.com, where you can also find all the contents of Uncanny Magazine. It is a bi-monthly magazine where we put out the contents in 2 phases for free on the web. So the one half on the first month, second half on the second month. So you can read Uncanny there. Uncanny has social media presence on, I don't know, just look at your social media. We're probably, whatever you're using,
we're good.
You know, so, and that will lead you to the Uncanny Magazine Kickstarter, which is on...
Just go to Kickstarter.com.
Kickstarter website.
Yeah, Kickstarter.com.
Like it is, but the name of it is The Space Unicorn Believes in You. So there'll be connections all over our social medias and all over the place. So that will all happen. And yeah, so you look there. We also have a Patreon. If you decide, I want to support Uncanny this month, but Kickstarter is not my thing. So you can still go over to Patreon and still become a patron during that period. Or there is a wonderful place called Waitlist Books, which is an independent ebook bookseller that has been around for a very long time. And you can always get an Uncanny subscription there.
Very cool.
Fantastic. Thanks so much for being with us, Michael.
Thank you so much for having me again.
Thanks for listening. If you enjoyed this episode or any of our episodes, please, please consider sharing it with your friends on social media and give us a like or some stars on the platform or the podcatcher that you're listening to us on. Those likes help with the nasty little algorithm so new people can find us when searching for good stuff to listen to. If you'd like to keep up with the Functional Nerds on social media, the official podcast socials are as follows. At the-functional-nerds on Facebook. At functionalnerds_podcast on Instagram. Shut up. I couldn't get the same one. It just didn't work that way. So hush. And you know what? It's going to get worse here. And at thefunctionalnerds.bluesky, which is BSKY, .social. I know. I couldn't keep it copacetic. I tried, but hush. Tracy and I have our own accounts. We're on Facebook, Instagram, and Blue Sky. You can find us by searching. If you want me, it's ATFMB, because that's just my handle everywhere I go. Or you can search for Tracy Townsend and find Tracy on social as well. Our Patreon helps keep the lights on, and new episodes like this one coming out week after week, which we've been pretty good at. I mean, we're very consistent, so you might consider checking us out over at patreon.com/functionalnerds just to support the pod and help us out there, you know? It does help. Thanks again for listening. And I have one question for you before I go. Is it baseball season yet?
Mr. Carpiers.
You got it right. How about that?
Yeah.
You can call me Cannoli Joe.
Hello, Cannoli Joe.
If you've never listened to the podcast, there's two different styles here. There's Tracy, who does prep work and comes up with some very thoughtful questions. And then, oh, squirrel.
Oh, for God's sake, Patrick Louise.
Hello, Patrick. It is I, Clayface.
Okay. That's probably a good enough signal.
When someone comes up to me and says, hey, I really love what you do, I'm like, I'm sorry. Do you know who I, like, I think you have me confused with someone else.
The whiz bang and the gosh wow and the sense of wonder stuff.
My favorite thing about time travel is I actually had a time travel joke for you guys, but you didn't like it.
I'm so excited.